Hey there, everybody, and welcome back to the Imperial Senate Podcast, Databank Discussions. I am your host, Claire Stribling, and I am thrilled to discuss yet another one of the unsung heroes from a galaxy far, far away with all of you. So if you didn't get a chance to listen to the previous episode, Charlie Ashby and I had a phenomenal time diving into the history and majesty of the Polis Massa medical droids. And after you listen to this episode, I highly recommend you go back and catch that one because it was just a lot of fun. Also, it's important to note that if you're hearing this podcast in your ear holes right now, I'd like to say thank you so, so much for becoming a patron for the Imperial Senate Patreon. And we're just really grateful that you are supporting us and by extension, supporting the Empire. So thank you. Your service and loyalty will be commended. Now today we're going to be talking about a character that I adore. This character is galaxy renowned as being an all-star bad boy from the desert that Urban Dictionary has dubbed the undisputed pimp of pod racing.
Yoko to Bantha Pudu.
That is right, folks. Today we are going to be talking about none other than the Bunta Eve demon himself, Sebulba. And this superb choice was from none other than the Imperial Senate's own Nikki Kumar, who I have an excellent chat with a little bit later in the show. So without further ado, let's punch it. First things first, we're going to talk a little bit about Sebulba's origins behind the scenes. So, when Lucasfilm began pre-production for Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, there was an incredibly intimidating and frustrating task that was presented to the design team. They had to create a world that was both rooted in previously accepted Star Wars lore, and yet it had to become something completely new that nobody had seen before. Terrell Whitlock, who is a renowned zoologist and illustrator, became an incredibly vital member of the art department for Episode 1 and was essentially a catalyst for Lucas's creative strategy. What she did was build a photographic library of many real-world animals, and George used this photographic archive to combine and create new creatures. So Sebulba was one of the many creations that began this way. He was born of Lucas's idea of a creature that walks on his hands and uses his feet as arms. And here's a little clip of Whitlock talking about this design process, which apparently went very quickly and smoothly for this handsome devil.
George came to one of our many art meetings and said, one of the main pod racers is not a very nice person, and he walks on his hands and drives with his feet, and he's small because he has to fit into the pod racers. That was my assignment. Okay. The week before, George had just signed off on Jar Jar. I was so happy I went home and had a party.
A purple Sebulba.
The fun thing was Jar Jar took a year and a half, and I came up with this idea. George liked it immediately. An afternoon's work.
It's good to me.
That afternoon, he signed off on it. I was so happy.
He's great. He's going to be one of the great characters. He's going to ride the Jabba the Hutt.
From there, Whitlock wanted his body to resemble kind of like an arachnid, but have his face resemble an arrogant camel, which I don't know about you, but I think that that is a delightful description of a creature. Arrogant camel. I love that.
I thought to myself, what animal is almost always grumpy, or it seems to be grumpy? I thought, I know. Camels. His face and his neck. You look at him. That's a camel.
And originally, Sebulba had pointy teeth coming out of the sides of his mouth, but later that was changed because it looked way too awkward in the animation stage every time he spoke. Though, this early in the design process, the essence of Sebulba was abundantly clear. He was to be an arrogant and creepy-looking champion podracer with questionable morals, and I'd like to say that he certainly looked the part. So, the way that the creature design process worked was that Terrell Whitlock would approve the basic sketch of any particular character. Then, she would flex her zoologist muscles and begin creating orthographic sketches of each character in a neutral position in order to get their general posture down. As she described it, these drawings were similar in design to what Da Vinci did with his drawings of the Vitruvian Man, or also known as the Man in the Circle, And she would also draw the major characters' skeletons in great detail, and sometimes even including how their muscles were positioned to help the animators begin their process of creating a CGI character. These orthographic drawings were transferred into 3D sculptures, or maquettes, by the art department, or ILM crew, which, after being approved by George Lucas, of course, were then scanned into the computers to begin the effects process. And if you ever get an opportunity to flip through the book, The Making of Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, I highly suggest you do so because, well, many reasons, but also on page 110, there is a great photo of Doug Chang and Richard Miller looking at Sebulba's maquette. And, by the way, Richard Miller is responsible for sculpting Sebulba's maquette, so thank you, Richard Miller, for being yet another person in the long line of Sebulba's parents / creators. Anyway, along with the basic maquettes, many of the other major CG characters, Sebulba included, were given larger sculptures and busts. Then, ViewPaint supervisor Gene Bolt would paint these sculptures and busts to make them beautiful and lifelike and colorful. Then, using ILM's computer painting software called, you guessed it, ViewPaint, since she's the ViewPaint supervisor, she would recreate that color scheme digitally for the animators to work with. And, little fun fact, the color scheme for Sebulba, as noted by Terrell Whitlock, was inspired by catfish skin, so that's kind of odd. After the fully colorized digital rendering was complete, animation supervisor Rob Coleman and his team were then given the challenge of bringing these animated characters moving and shaking. After reading the script, he talked to George Lucas on each character's personality profile and backstory in order to help determine their body language and with what attitude they would move. According to Coleman, it was important to keep in mind that Sebulba was the greatest racer who ever lived, and he knew it. Terrell Whitlock also assisted with movement based on her zoological experience, and considering the weird combination of creatures that makes up Sebulba, it's probably a good thing that she stayed along. Here's her talking a little bit about how she wanted Sebulba to move.
Bipedally, he could kind of move sort of like a chicken because his elbows would act as the backward-facing ankle that a chicken would use. Where he's leaping into, say, a pod racer, then you have to think of more like a jumping spider. A little bit of spider, a little bit of chicken.
It's also important to note that this is the biggest CGI undertaking that had ever happened up to that point. It was just unprecedented. And because of that, it was a huge animation crew working on it. And each CG character was given a lead animator who had a small team working underneath them. And the lovely individual who was responsible for personally overseeing Sebulba's creation through CG was Miguel Fuertes. And this is essentially how Sebulba was born. Of course, it would be a tragedy if I didn't mention this person who was vital in making Sebulba come to life, and that is Scottish voice actor and impressionist Lewis MacLeod.
Yeah, it should be loud.
Yoko to Banta Pudu.
But you could put a little laugh on the end of that one.
Yeah,
about it.
SB 309,
310, take 2.
Yoko to Banta Pudu.
All right, that was good. We'll try one more with a little bit more anger.
Yoko to Banta Pudu.
Other than Sebulba, of course, MacLeod is probably best known for his appearances on Dead Ringers, which is a BBC radio and television comedy program, and Newsoids, which is a British satirical puppet comedy television show. And for the American audiences, he's also done work on the animated show The Amazing World of Gumball. And most importantly to me, as this show defined my childhood time in the UK, he started voicing the lovely, incredible, unprecedented, nicest animated character ever, Postman Pat, the star of the similarly named animated children's television show. And he started voicing Postman Pat starting in 2016. Now, when it comes to Star Wars, you can also hear MacLeod as Sebulba in his video game appearances, such as Star Wars Episode 1 Racer, Star Wars Super Bombad Racing, Star Wars Racer Revenge, and Lego Star Wars the video game. And I think it's kind of funny, but he also voiced Obi-Wan Kenobi in LucasArts Star Wars Obi-Wan, Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds, and Star Wars Super Bombad Racing. So That's pretty cool, right? So now that we have a little bit more information on how Sebulba was created behind the scenes, let's talk about him and his life story in-universe. The databank describes him as a crafty, vicious Dug. Sebulba became one of the Outer Rim's most successful pod racers. Whether roaming the streets of Mos Espa or piloting his massive orange pod racer, Sebulba was aggressive and arrogant. He was not above cheating to win a race and would even resort to illegal weapons in an attempt to defeat his opponents. Sebulba was Mos Espa's reigning pod race champion until he entered the Bunta Eve Classic, where he was defeated by young Anakin Skywalker, much to the Dug's frustration. Sebulba first appeared in the novelization of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace, which was released on April 29, 1999, 20 days before the release of the film in theaters, which even thinking about the craziness that would happen now if a novel was released early is just kind of mind-boggling. Though, of course, that is how it was done with the original trilogy as well, so it wasn't that weird. Sebulba, who's one of the most notable members of the Dug species in the Star Wars universe, was born in the city of Pixelito on the planet Malastair, a world renowned for its pod racing. Sebulba left Malastair at an early age to continue to pursue his pod racing dream, and he very quickly became a very big fish, albeit in a much smaller pond than Malastair. He began dominating the much newer Tatooine racing scene, and he immediately became a crowd favorite with his brutal, sabotaging, take-no-prisoner style of flying, and most importantly, his penchant for winning. Every race, Sebulba wears a flashy leather outfit that is decorated with coins that he has won from previous pod racing victories. So as he walks, he can literally hear his previous successes jingle with every step he takes, which has just got to give him the confidence and arrogance to win just over and over again. And of course, he does. Plus, he is a master trash talker.
Scrawny dough pot, Slimo.
Yo canto banta pudo.
Which, for those of you who don't speak Huttese, first of all, get on that. And second of all, it translates to, "You won't walk away from this one, you slave scum." Of course, Anakin responds with, "Don't count on it, slime ball." And he responds, "You're bantha pudo." So, yeah, I'd say he's pretty good at getting inside his opponent's heads with that trash talk. As I said earlier, Sebulba is not above cheating to win, and he has many, many tricks up his sleeve to do so, including a freaking flamethrower, which he has installed into one of his engines, and that is what Anakin is referring to when he tells Padme that Sebulba flashed him with his vents, which is so badass. A flamethrower. Wow. Well, anyway, he also uses tactics like throwing debris or sometimes wrenches into the engines of his competitors. Though, of course, we all know how the events of that fateful Bunta Eve turned out for Sebulba. Yep, it ended in poodoo. In his free time, you can find Sebulba throwing an exorbitant amount of money into improving his mammoth orange pod racer, which has that super classy split X configuration. And just looking at that monster and watching how fast it flies, it really shows you how much money he has actually put into that thing. But on his off days, you can also find Sebulba frequenting many of the seediest cantinas in Mos Espa and just partying and throwing his wealth and status in the faces of pretty much anyone who will pay attention. Which, if you want to stay out of trouble on Tatooine, it's probably a good idea to appease Sebulba since he's got admirers in high places. More specifically, the Hutt cartel. So, yeah, watch your backs, people. Sebulba owned two beautiful Twi'lek slaves who he used as his personal masseuses as well. And what better way is there to establish your wealth than have a few stunning women massaging your shoulders in public everywhere you go? Real classy there, Sebulba. Nice going. After that fateful day when Sebulba was bested by an annoying little slave boy, Sebulba eventually rebuilt his pod and went back to racing on Tatooine. And he continued to do so all throughout the Clone Wars. And somehow during this time, which is insane to me, Ben Quadraneros, the little buffoon whose pod didn't even move an inch before it exploded in Episode 1, He became Sebulba's biggest rival and fiercest competitor. And I don't know if many of you watch those 30 for 30 sports documentaries by ESPN, but I desperately want to watch a Star Wars version on, like, the rise of Ben Quadraneros. And I would even more so want to see the interview Sebulba would give and just how much that crushes his pride. That just sounds awesome to me. But I digress. Now, other than his video game appearances and his role in Episode 1, if you look really closely, you can briefly see Sebulba on posters in the background of the Clone Wars episodes Friends and Enemies, which is Season 4, Episode 14, and in the episode The Rise of Clovis, which is Season 6, Episode 6. And, for all of you Freemaker Adventures fans, he's also in the episode Race on Tatooine. So, a bit earlier, I talked to the man responsible for choosing such a dastardly villain for my show today, Nikki Kumar, and we discussed a little bit about what makes Sebulba an excellent addition to the Star Wars universe, so I hope you all enjoy. So, right now, I am talking to a very special guest, and that is the Imperial Senate's very own, Nikki Kumar. So, how you doing, bud?
Hey, Claire, not bad. Just getting ready to talk about some Sebulba.
Yes. But when you told me you wanted to talk about Sebulba on the show, I was really excited because, like, he's such a good nemesis for Anakin, and he's such... I have a soft spot for, like, the scum of the universe, mm-hmm. I guess.
No, I feel that.
So he's perfect.
Yeah, it's such a cool thing about these villains because you have... Just taking Phantom Menace, right? You have the sinister sort of Sidious, and then you have the, you know, Darth Maul as, you know, the silent sort of assassin who's hunting people. And then you have, like, just the douche on the neighborhood, right? Like
the neighborhood douche.
Yeah, it's Sebulba, and, you know, they have history, and he's just awful. Like, I mean, he's great. That's why I love him, but he's also just, you know, someone you can hate so easily because he's a cheater. And that's the worst thing in a sports movie. If the pod race is a sports movie, you always hate the cheater.
But weirdly, he's still somewhat endearing. Like, he's such a good showman. Mm-hmm. Like, every time he goes around the track, he's, like, waving to the crowd and, like, blowing kisses. I was like, dang, that is the kind of, like, athlete that I'm, like, all about.
Exactly.
You pump up that crowd, man. Yeah. You do that.
That's a large part of why I also like Sebulba. I think I'm not trying to equate the two, but, like, I love Usain Bolt and just the sort of, yeah, the showmanship of not only being sort of, like, flashy and being able to, like, get people going, but also being able to back it up with results. And
oh, absolutely.
That's what's such a, like, a fascinating thing. There, you know, sports stars all over the world in all sorts of sports who they're full of it, but then they back it up, and it's amazing.
Yeah, as long as you back it up. Otherwise, I think you're the worst.
Right.
But Sebulba can back it up.
Yeah. I mean, he takes some nefarious turns to do it, but he does it.
You got to get it done however you can.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that kind of brings me to one of my questions for you. And that was, obviously, he's a cheater. The data bank specifically describes him as not being above cheating to win. And, I haven't been able to find any official rule book for pod racing, but why do you think he gets away with it on Tatooine? Because it's not like they're not filming the racers. I mean, they have a little, like, tablet where you can track every racer that, like, Qui-Gon and Shmi and Padme and Jar Jar all look at. Like, why does he keep getting away with this?
Like, right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think sort of just everyone's in on it and they accept it. I mean, remember, we're looking at a race that is sort of presented by one of the top gangsters in the galaxy.
Oh, for sure.
And I think it's just sort of like they just sort of, you know, accept it. Like, you know, you're not going to, especially if sort of the Hutts and the big gangsters are backing this guy, you're not really going to start causing a fuss about, you know, who's cheating where, I think. I don't know. I feel like he just has too much backing. It's sort of one of those things that's swept under the rug. It's, it's maybe not exactly regulated, like you said.
Yeah, and I mean, like, since we're way out in the Outer Rim, like, pod racing is, like, obviously a bunch of other places, like Malastare, and which is, like, mid-rim. Like, do you... I figure that depending on where the pod racing is, like, you could get away with more. Because I feel like this is kind of a... Since it's such, like, a non-regulated planet as it is, I feel like they're a little bit looser with, like, the penalties there. I feel like Sebulba can't race anywhere else.
Yeah.
He wouldn't get away with it.
Right. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where it's like, do we know of any instances where pod racing occurs, like, in the mid-rim or anything? It all sort of seems like it's a very sort of, like, outlawish kind of sport.
Yeah, the closest to the core you can find is Malastare. Mm-hmm. Everywhere else seemed to be on the Outer Rim. I was like, interesting.
Yeah.
I guess you won't find the senator showing up at a pod race. Or if you do, it's probably for some sketchy, nefarious dealings.
Right. Yeah, I think that's such another, like, endearing part of pod racing. It's not quite legal. I don't know. I haven't seen Phantom Menace in a while, so I kind of forgot what the reaction to sort of the gambling side and the racing side is from sort of, like, characters like Padme and stuff.
Yeah, Padme seems to not be thrilled about it.
Mm-hmm.
She's just, and of course she can't say anything because they don't know that she's actually the queen, but she's like, the queen would not approve, and then she gets all grumpy in the corner. But yeah, it seems like this is kind of like a, it's not something someone in the core world would be fond of.
Right.
It's like drag racing.
Yeah.
A little bit.
It's very sort of, they took that sort of, yeah, like, underground racing vibe and then took it to, like, Formula One extremes.
Right.
And, yeah.
Just strapping jet engines onto, like,
right,
a little cockpit with some, like, rope.
Yeah. And, like,
that's safe.
I think, again, like, everyone is entitled to you know, what they did connect to and stuff. But when I see people putting down the pod race, like, to me, it doesn't make, like, I can't get on that wavelength because it's so fun. It's such a unique way or unique thing to bring into Star Wars on that level. Like, it's just insane that they're like, yeah, you know what? Let's put this race in. And, you know, you can bring in someone like Sebulba to antagonize, you know, this boy who we're learning about being very special. And
little 9-year-old slave boy.
Right.
Like, what adult creature or person would be like, I'm gonna bully this kid?
Yeah.
Like, what?
and it's a great way to just dig into that world that Anakin is a part of. And yeah, I just like the racing aesthetic also. I don't, like, super follow Formula One, but I do enjoy it, and it's cool to see. I think George Lucas is also a big F1 fan, and it was cool to see that translate and also serve as, like, this big homage to Ben-Hur, which is a very classic piece of filmmaking, the chariot race.
For sure. Yeah, and that's I'm with you though on, like, the everybody hating on the pod race.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna be honest with you. I was gonna say pod race apologist, but that's not right. I'm a pod race enthusiast, and I'm totally cool for, like, a whole movie of just, like, pod racing.
Oh, man.
I am in the spectators' seats. And I'm going to see pod racing if I'm in that universe, because I love the pod racing scene and I love every single character in it, every, like, racer. I'm like, I'm so in love with you, and all the weird noises and the, oh my God, I love
right.
it so much.
No, like, I feel that. It's one of those things, like, you see those online quizzes and it's like, or not even an online quiz, it's just like, what would you want to be in a galaxy far, far away? People are like, Jedi, Senator. And I'm like, I want to be the star pod racer. Like, I want to be the best pod racer in the galaxy and just be a superstar.
I am totally with you. But do you want me to blow your mind right now?
Yes.
So
One thing I dug up that I just like laugh every time I think about it is after Anakin wins the Boone's Eve Classic, Sebulba fixes his pod and keeps racing, but can you guess who becomes his rival and like greatest competitor and becomes one of the most famous pod racers other than Sebulba?
Is the hint Tatooine? Is the hint Anakin's poster in the Clone Wars?
Yes.
Benny Q.
Yeah, it is.
Oh man.
Yeah. Benny Q.
If I had another episode,
it's amazing
to do, or like did a double feature, he'd be in there too. Because oh my gosh, I have such mad respect for that guy.
Quadraneros, man. Oh, I just want to give him a hug.
Yep. And like I think this is sort of like a Legends thing now, but I remember like once reading that Ben Quadraneros was like, someone challenged him that he was like too crap to race in the Boonta Eve. So he's like, I'll show you. I'll go in. And then the genius that he is, he botches his racer, right? So he doesn't have to do it. But I think just by entering, I think he still wins the bet.
Oh my
so,
God.
I think you know, he's a lot smart. He's a savvy dude. And now he knows, like, you know, can just sort of go on those, like, mid-level tracks, you know? Don't stress himself too much. But yeah, no, he comes back. Comes back to go head-to-head with Sebulba. What a
man.
That's
so amazing. Maybe that's another episode for another day. I'll have to dive into a lot of Legends, but that story is now my headcanon on... On good old, yeah. Good old Benny Q. And I've never heard him called Benny Q. And thank you so much for giving that to me.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
no,
my God.
Definitely got a soft spot for that guy. He's a great racer.
Oh, all-star. In our hearts. Mm-hmm. Number one. No, he's number two. Number one in our hearts is Sebulba, of
right.
course. But I have to ask you, do you have a favorite Sebulba moment?
Let's see. I probably got a couple. I love, like we were talking about earlier, when it's in sort of like the extended pod race intro, when he sort of like runs onto his like cart and then starts like fist pumping when they announce his name.
Yes.
That's up there.
What a legend.
I like that he gets massages before the race.
Right?
Because, you know, he's got to be limber.
For sitting
for,
in a
for
pod
throwing
and not...
screwdrivers and stuff.
That's right.
And oh man, there's probably something I'm forgetting. I think I like the idea of him just like sitting in cafes and like that was just a cool thing. Like I want to know what he was doing before Jar Jar sent that like frog thing into his cup or whatever, and he got all right. mad.
I think the funniest thing about that scene, like when Jar Jar flings that thing away, is that after, like when the scene is over, like he eats that thing.
Yeah.
He like has the grumpiest look on his face, and he's like, this has been in the dirt, and somebody threw it at me. Might as well eat it. Like that is my mentality when it comes to food. It's just like you throw it my way. Yeah, all right, that's fine.
Yeah.
I'm cool with it.
No, for sure. He's
I have to say he's a legend, man.
Yeah. He doesn't take it from anyone, even off-worlders.
Especially off-worlders.
Right.
They got to learn some respect.
You know, and Sebulba's the guy to teach him. That's
Absolutely.
What's great.
I mean, he's got friends in high places. I mean, obviously, like when Jabba the Hutt comes out and watches you race, you know.
Yeah. I mean, surely Jabba was backing that horse. Actually,
oh,
do we know?
Absolutely.
Jabba fell asleep.
He probably had some money on it, though. Sebulba probably was not in good graces with Jabba after that, but he did fall asleep. He must, like, yeah. How do you go to a pod race and fall asleep? Jabba, what are you doing, man?
I just imagine now that he does that at every race. Like, it's just a thing. Like, maybe the sound of the engines, like, lull him to sleep.
You know what? That I could totally see that because Sebulba's engine sounds like... Like when you're playing Pac-Man and he's eating all the pellets in a row, but if you like pitch it down, like that's what it always. That's kind of like a. It's kind of a soothing noise, a little bit.
Yeah, no, I can
nice rhythmic thrumming.
I think there's just something about, maybe he just finds it all very soothing. Because I mean,
watching people explode and die. I mean, he does that in, you know, with the Rancor every day in his own palace.
That's right.
Of course, you know.
That's right. Yeah. The
soothing.
The whole. I guess like once you go to enough pod races, maybe it's just sort of like, it's like, oh, this is relaxing now. And you know, I remember, so I got to go to a couple days of the Formula One race in Austin
a few times. Oh, that's cool.
And like the first thing that hits you when you go as a Star Wars fan is, oh my god, this sounds like pod racing. Because like it's literally just the sounds of F1, like, you know, the sound team, like,
yes,
pulled that. And so that's the first thing that hits you. And it's like, wow, this is real life pod racing.
Now this is pod racing.
Now this is, exactly. And
sorry.
Yeah, basically, like, it can get relaxing, you know, just watching them go by.
That is a really satisfying sound.
Yeah.
That was a pretty good one. You are killing it on the sound effects and like impressions game lately, I have to say. Like your Lando like killed me the other day.
Oh,
like,
man.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, I wonder what Lando thinks about pod racing. Maybe he lost a little money or earned a little money.
Yeah, I feel like pod racing, I feel like he'd go. I don't know if he'd bet. Because it seems like he likes to play games that he has some form of control over.
That's very true.
I feel
true.
Like that would be the problem with the pods and Lando.
Right. Too much chance.
Yeah. But let's see. Oh, I also wanted to bring up, Sebulba doesn't speak all that much in the movie, but he says the word poodoo 2 times out of his very short number of lines. And I feel like that fits in with the Imperial Senate, like, with our essence, because poop always comes up at some point,
right.
You know? So, like, you picked somebody who just, he fits in with us, and I appreciate that.
He's our, like, one of our many spirit animals.
He's got poodoo on the brain.
Yeah.
And so do we.
Yeah, does that make him the, like, second most profane character after R2?
You know what? It's possible, because he throws some, like, pretty intense trash talking around, and, I think he also has an achuta in there somewhere, and that is, as C-3PO taught us, that is very rude.
How rude.
How rude, indeed.
Yeah. He's got a colorful mouth, no doubt, and I think that's just another sort of great thing about, it's, you know, it's not quite the underworld, but it's just that sort of seedy part of the galaxy that it's such a, like, interesting juxtaposition of having that sweet Anakin boy who just wants to help people, engaging in like just this weird dirty part of sort of like galactic entertainment.
Yeah, for sure. And he's like, I mean, it's, and there's such a, he's such a good foil for Anakin in that way, that just all this pure hearted little goodness, and then me just like throwing achutas and poodoos around and throwing wrenches in people's stuff and sabotaging. They're a good match, I think.
Indeed.
But one question that I was also thinking of, if it weren't for cheating his way to the top, do you think that Sebulba would still be the number one pod racer at the Mos Espa race course?
Honestly, I do, because
yeah,
he's just alone. He has everything that I think you would expect from a good pod racer. He's aggressive. He's got a beast of a pod. I think is it called like the Gargantuan or something? I forget.
You know,
what,
I'm not sure if it's. I'm not sure if they've listed its name in canon anywhere. If it has, I missed it somewhere. But I would like
it's
to call
the plug
it the Gargantuan.
F Mammoth. And he
I mean, that sounds right.
Yeah, and in Legends, he gets a later one called the Gargantuan. So
the Gargantuan.
So he knows how to bring gear onto the track. And I think that, combined with that sort of aggressive attitude, that willing to just go for it. I think, you know, that he really does himself a disservice, I think, by cheating so much.
Definitely.
I think he could win, no doubt, by himself. Because he's obviously very talented. He had to start somewhere. And actually, now I got a really interesting image of, like, small kid Sebulba just learning how to cheat for the first time.
Sweet little Dougie boy.
He's like, oh, if I unplug this with my foot, I can beat this guy. but yeah, I think Sebulba... No, yeah, to answer your question, that guy has what it takes to be a winner without the tricks. I feel that very much.
That's good. I'm glad that you believe that. I think that... I don't know what I think on that subject. He's obviously a really good racer, but Ben Quadraneros comes up, man. Oh, I mean, it's nice, though, that Tatooine got like that kind of challenge. I think Sebulba is an exceptional racer for sure, but I think that I feel like it'd be a little bit closer for sure if he didn't cheat quite as much.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's like straight up wrecking people's pods.
And murdering them.
Yeah. So I think that's true. I think it would be closer, but I think he still definitely is a competitor. You know, he's not just a scrub sitting at the back like a Team Topagalis, you know.
That was the first name that came to my mind as well.
Yeah. Naturally, I think just going back to pod racing in general, I think that's another like just really fun aspect of what that race gave us, because you got to just George just got to go ham with like all these different sort of like racing not stereotypes but like tropes. So you have like Odie Mandrell with his pit droids are like the award-winning pit crew, and then they like also fly through engines and stuff, and just like, yeah, all the different species and seeing how like widespread this thing is. You have like Gascano and all these different guys.
I love him so much.
Right. And Rats Tyrell.
Yeah.
Blows
go
up.
Rats.
Poor dude.
Aww.
And yeah, I think Rawr. Like just from a design standpoint, a world building standpoint, like the pod race is just really special in that regard.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. That is just like, as a creature enthusiast, it's just like, that's like porn to me. Just like watching, wow, that was a really, really beautiful metaphor, Claire. But yeah. You know, I just,
reaching
it's
for
just
the stars.
So, that is like, there is nothing that will keep my eyes glued to a television set more than a scene full of creatures and like aliens, like from Star Wars. Just the more that are on the screen, the more I'm paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add super badass racing on top of that, and that's just, it's perfect.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's a really cool part of sort of just Star Wars in general. And it like reminded me of, or it in part what got me like really excited for what I thought was gonna be a part of Solo. And like, I thought there was going to be stuff on, like, the racing in Corellia. Like, apart from getting a shout-out to Needles.
Yeah, Needles,
yeah.
My boy.
Needles sounds pretty cool.
I would love to watch Needles
race. Right. I think, like, yeah, I would have really liked to see sort of, like, the Corellia race. And especially, like, with Ron Howard's, like... experience with Rush, the Formula One movie he did a while ago. I thought that was, you could see like parts of that got into the speeder chase, but I think it would have been really cool if Solo did have like a race portion, and he really got to go into that.
And you could tell in that chase scene that just had total drag race kind of feel to it.
Mm-hmm.
That it would extended editions of Solo.
Yeah, just like some of
the
filming.
Corellian race.
The filming of that chase, like you could see where that like that know-how of how to do something high speed came into play, which is, it was really cool to see that.
Yeah, I'm totally, I'm with you on that one. But did you ever end up playing any of the pod racing video games, like Super Bombad Racing or Star Wars Episode One Racer?
I didn't do the Bombad one, but I that like that original racer game was sort of one of the first games I fell in love with.
Yes.
Like actually, like the first video game that ever got to me was Crash Team Racing, which is like
oh heck yeah,
yeah, like the Crash Bandicoot Mario Kart, right?
Yeah.
And so like basically my gaming foundation is in racing games. And yeah, once I upped the ante with Star Wars and pod racing, that was like that was insane. And it's like I'm glad you brought that up because this will tie in a few threads we've got going. I recently borrowed my friend's N64, and yes. Then I went to like a used video game store and bought Racer, because when I was little, my parents never let me get anything like video games wise, so I would always like be playing my friends. So this was like a huge moment for me the day I bought my own copy of Racer, and it only happened 3 years ago. So anyway, I got Racer. I was like, this is the greatest day of my life. I put it in, and because it's, you know, the old cartridges and people like still have their saved games on it, I I opened like the first file, and this dude or person, I don't know who it was, but they're my favorite person on earth because they had a super maxed out Ben Quadraneros.
Oh, on heck that account. Yeah.
And yeah, yes! No, it was insane because he's got that quadruple engine and he's just flying. Like all his stats
were
amazing. I don't know how they did it, but
that person is my hero. Yeah. I want to like go up to them and shake their hand. Yeah, that is so good.
Whoever they are, they made my life better and I thank them. So yeah. Racer definitely was a big video game moment for me.
Yeah, I was a Sebulba girl myself, you know. I guess even at a young age, I liked the bad boy. No, I didn't play Bombad Racing either, but my N64 is still alive and well, so every now and then I'll dust off the cartridges.
Yeah,
and
boot it up.
It's so good.
Yeah, I think just going back to episode one in general, like I feel like the pod race was what stuck with me the most, even more than, you know, like the lightsaber fights. Because like I still have a poster in my room where it's like the faux race promotional poster, and it's got like Sebulba and Anakin on it.
Oh, and that's so sweet.
I'll have to like put a picture somewhere.
Yes, please do. Like tweet it out or something.
Yeah, I also have like a pillowcase that I still use where one side is Racer Anakin and the other side is Sebulba.
Oh, that's so awesome.
And I prefer the Sebulba side, of course. And yeah, and I got like the little like Lego like miniature of Sebulba's pod racer. Yeah, like I feel like that is something that really stuck with me. I think probably just because I've always sort of been into the like the racing aesthetic and sort of the sports stakes, right? Like not exactly life or death, or I guess in pod racing it is, but
yeah,
not exactly like the, you know, the lightsaber fighting stakes that we're used to in Star Wars, but just sort of like I need to win this level of tension, right?
For sure. That this is kind of I have kind of a silly question for you, but I thought it was fun. If you had your own pod, how would it look? How would you design your dream pod racer?
Oh man, I feel like I've probably like done this at some point. There's some like interactive thing where you build a pod. That seems familiar.
I don't know what that is, but I want to know what that is.
That it seems so familiar to me. Like you pick engines and you pick a pod thing. I don't know. Let's see. I really like, I know I just threw him under the bus earlier, but I really like Tinto Pagalisa's, like, sitting, his pod or whatever, where it's like,
yeah, like the cockpit donut, area,
basically.
Yes, the donut. Yeah. Okay, how does he see anything? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. Maybe there's like a really good like screen projection or something, or maybe there's a window on it. I don't know.
I feel like you're missing something. Yeah. Like,
but I always really thought that was cool. And engines wise, probably Gasganos are pretty cool. Or Sebulbas.
Yeah.
I like Sebulbas, like sort of the almost like sideways chevrons on
yeah.
The so yeah, maybe Sebulbas engines and Tinto Pagalisa's cockpit.
I am all for that. I kind of like Sebulba's cockpit because it looks kind of like a raft, like a life raft.
Oh yeah.
You know?
With the inflatable.
A little bit on the sides just being... Yeah.
Right.
Which it's kind of endearing to me. Uh-huh. And but the one, if I were to make my own pod, since I'm only 5 feet, I would embrace the little man syndrome and I would go get the biggest pod I could find and even bigger than Sebulbas just to show him up, and I would paint it like neon green.
There we go.
Just so that everybody could see me coming and it would blind them.
The gargantuan plus.
Yeah, the gargantuan plus. G plus racer.
I can dig it, yeah.
He's so good. Thank you.
I'd start quaking in my pod when I see the big neon green coming for me.
Yeah, I'm like the big green monster.
Right.
It's called my pod. Redefined.
Yeah, that would be a race. I mean, it just
that
goes to
be
show, like,
awesome.
Think about what sort of pods they could design now.
Oh my
like
god.
It's like to me it's a genuine shame that pod racing really hasn't gotten any sort of like visual like really good visual medium since the big race. Like, you know,
for sure.
Like it pops up a little in the club, right, in episode 2.
Yeah.
But yeah, like just think about things they could design now. And yeah, like it's really cool. Just sort of the creativity that goes into the design of these racing machines, these death traps.
They're so beautiful, death traps, though. I'll take it. I want to know what the safety ratings on those are, how they'd rate those.
Oh, man.
Not good, probably.
No, I think they just sort of, I think they don't even talk about it.
Yeah.
Just, you know what? You know the risks.
Just don't even think about it. Just fly.
Yep.
It'll be okay.
I think I probably should mention this because I don't want to forget. This is just sort of turned into, sorry, Sebulba, but this is also a pod racing podcast.
But Sebulba is like the essence of pod racing.
Right.
He is like the poster child, so I feel like it fits. It's all good.
Okay. So like going back to just pod racing in general, I would say top 5 all-time Star Wars theme songs were like music cues, the flag parade. That is one of my all-time favorite pieces of Star Wars soundtrack.
I can hear it in my head now.
Right?
I'm like swaying.
Yeah. And it, like,
I'm marching in my seat.
Those trumpets start hitting, and like I always think of that, like that sort of like panning shot over the stadium, you know, the seating and stuff. And like, yeah, to me that is a large part of, you know, just what makes Star Wars magical in general. Just these, like, insane situations and locations. And, you know, with the amazing John Williams going on in the background.
Ugh. How could you go wrong?
Right. Yeah, so Flag Parade, that's a top-notch piece of music. And just imagine yourself, like, Sebulba, arms up in the air as that music's going, you know?
Oh my god, that's so epic.
Yeah, that's the good stuff right there.
Yeah. So, Nikki, I have one final question for you.
Okay.
And it's a doozy. All right. So, in an era of potentially endless Star Wars content, anything is possible. So, that being said, if we do eventually get Sebulba a Star Wars story, what would you personally want to find out about him, and how would you like the story to unfold?
Oh, man. So, Is this like, essentially, I've been offered to write Sebulba a Star Wars story?
Yes, it's all you, man.
Okay. So I did a little bit of, you know, in trying to prepare to talk about Sebulba, I looked up some of his Wikipedia stuff, and there's a section in Legends where they do sort of talk about his post-Phantom Menace life a bit. And there's a book called Jedi Quest. So it's part of that little, like, young, like, children's series of novels that took place between Episode 1 and Episode 2. I don't know if... Did you ever read those? It's like Anakin's the main character.
I never read those.
Yeah, so like they were like the original... This is what young Padawan Anakin did with his life. And so in book 3, which I didn't read, but I found out here, The Dangerous Games, he gets challenged by Sebulba again. So I thought that was...
A rematch of the century?
Right. I thought that was an interesting way to take Sebulba. I just wanted to shout that out, though, because that's not the story I would do. I'm not really bothered about him rematching Anakin. So, like, one of my favorite, narrative tropes is the, like, washed-up legend who then teaches a younger person, like, the ropes. So, I haven't seen Creed, but maybe Creed is, like, a good example of that. But the one that pops into my head the most often is, like, The Mask of Zorro.
Oh, definitely, right? Yeah.
And, to me, I think a really fun story would be, like, an up-and-coming pod racer, like, finding Sebulba, who's, like, now, like, a retired crotchety, like, even more crotchety old Sebulba, and, like, being trained by him, and... them both sort of like refinding a legacy, and just sort of like, yeah, just a good racing movie, low stakes racing movie. You know, the fate of the galaxy is not at risk, but just I think it'd be a lot of fun to see that kind of stuff again, and just sort of like
that would be so much fun,
right? And just watch a character come back from. Like, utter defeat. Maybe he never did race again, like, properly after losing to Anakin. Or maybe Ben Quadraneros took him to the absolute cleaners one day. And, you know, he never quite recovered. And he went into, like, alcoholism. And he was just, like, depressed. And everything was, like, bad for Sebulba. And then, so, you know, this little upstart Doug, maybe. Maybe a Doug. Another reason I brought up that legend stuff is because... they do talk about Sebulba's son and grandson having raced.
Sebulba has children.
Apparently.
Oh my god, in Legends he had children.
I think so. I don't exactly know.
Oh my god, little Doug family.
Yeah, I don't know which. Let me see if I can. It looks like a video game. Star Wars Demolition has his grandson called Pugwis.
Pugwis?
Oh my god, his picture is incredible too. He has an incredible picture. And then he has a son called Hecula, who was apparently not very good. Always crashed.
Oh.
Pugwis is better than
Sorry,
Hecula.
Every time you say Pugwis, it just makes me smile.
Right. So maybe it could be Pugwis reaching out to his old grandpa saying, you know, I want to be a racer. Or maybe I've got a debt I got to pay off to this guy called Weasel, who is a big fan of yours, and now like messes around with Enfys Nest.
Yeah, that's not somebody you want to mess around with.
So yeah, I'd love to see that story. I think you could do some fun things, some surprisingly touching things with an old grumpy Sebulba, who is maybe not quite as Maybe he's mellowed a little with age as far as, like, the evil side. But I think you could also, like, keep playing into that. Be a little anti-hero, teaching his grandson how to cheat.
Right, like the character that you shouldn't look up to, but you do.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I think that would be my Sebulba Star Wars story. And
I love that.
Yeah. I do want to mention actually one other thing, because this could also play into the character. So maybe Sebulba could find like some honorable, an honorable side of him, because it's something that the Clone Wars did actually that I always found really fascinating, and they did it with Watto also, I feel. So they took these two, like, you have these two characters in Phantom Menace. You have Watto, who's like, you know, essentially a slaver, right? And just teach, you know, selling parts and not really that honest. And then you have Sebulba, who's like the cheater, the douche, and the neighborhood douche. And and then the Clone Wars took those two species and then turned them into like honorable societies. So like,
yes,
the Toydarians have like a king, right? And
yeah, they do,
like a parliament and stuff. And the Doges of Malastare are like, yes, you know, like royalty essentially or something. At least, you know, I forget what the Doges were. They're like Italian city state people. Not the meme, but but yeah, I always thought that was really a really fascinating thing the Clone Wars did, and how they took these just scumbags and then were actually like, but you know, their home planets are actually like, you know, honorable, and they have high society and stuff. So I thought that was a really fascinating thing. So maybe there is a part of Sebulba that can tap into that Doug honor, and you know, maybe he's not all cheats on the inside.
That's right. You can't stereotype a whole group based on one person.
Yeah. And that's a lesson.
That is a lesson. It's a life lesson to learn from Star Wars, the Clone Wars, people.
Right. Thank you, Filoni.
Yes. All hail Filoni.
Yes.
So, Nikki, if people want to hear more from you or talk to you about Sebulba or Doug culture or pod racing in general, where can they find you on the various social medias?
Yeah, if you want to get in touch, fan out over Sebulba, you can reach me at Nikuicious, which is NAQUICIOUS on Twitter. And that's like probably the most accessible place. I'm on Facebook in the Star Wars Podcast Alliance. You can find me. Find me there too if you are a part of that or want to join. And yeah, I'd be most pleased to talk about all things pod racing, all things Sebulba, with anyone. Definitely reach out.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Nikki.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure I'll talk to you soon, man.
Yeah, I think so. Probably. But yeah, definitely thanks for having me. This is a really exciting sort of show that we are able to put on Patreon, so I am definitely glad to be a part of it.
Well, thank you. All right, and I'll talk to you later.
Bye. Okay, bye.
So there you have it. Sebulba truly is an all-star racer, even without the antics. And the pod racing scene is fantastic just the way it is. If you want to talk a little bit more about Sebulba, or if you just want to send us a shout out and say hello, you can find the podcast on Twitter at ImpSenatePod and on Instagram at ImperialSenatePod. Or you can find our Facebook page by punching our name into your nifty little search bar in Facebook and like us, because that'd be cool. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at CStribs. Also, if you enjoyed this episode of Databank Discussions, tell your friends, your family, acquaintances, or just shout it from a mountaintop, because that's a really cool way to do it. And we really just appreciate all of you being patrons of the show, and that kind of sharing really helps us acquire new patrons and bring you even more content like this. And speaking of that kind of extra content, there was a lot of super neat information I learned about the shooting of the pod race scenes in episode 1, and it was only tangentially related to Sebulba, but it was really, really cool. So if you want to learn some more of those fun facts that I found while digging through the Jedi archives, just go to the blog section of our Patreon page, and you should be able to read all about it there. So from all of us here at the Imperial Senate Podcast, I am signing off. Thank you so much for listening to Databank Discussions, and remember, the Force will be with you always.